The following broadcast has been approved for Elite Hornets fans.
What a block by Cody Zeller.
Walker down the lane. Drive, shoots, scores! Game over!
Bringing back the buzz was only the beginning.
We will not go quietly into the night.
It's Hornets talk for the hardcore fan. It's Hive Talk Live.
Welcome in, Hornets fans. You are listening to Hive Talk Live here on atthehive.com. It's Hornets Talk for the hardcore fan. We are live in the Gittimer.com studios in BEA, beautiful uptown Charlotte. I'm Doug Branson.
And I'm still waiting on CBS to release the rest of the brackets. I'm David Walker, Doug. And for those of you that missed our morning mini-pod, I reuse that joke because I like it.
Well, I think you have to get used to that. If you are a dedicated listener, we are going to repeat some things.
Especially,
I think you have to.
Hilarious jokes.
Great, just grade A material. But I hope you're enjoying the morning mini pods, the Hive O'Clock alarm.
Yeah, they're okay. The people.
Yes, the people.
Okay, yeah.
You seem to be enjoying yourself. I don't know. Listen. I enjoy them because I pants are optional. It's so early in the morning. It's from the home studio.
I tell you what, it does get my day started off on the right foot.
Man.
I'll say that to you, Doug.
Yeah.
There's no person I'd rather talk to first thing in the morning.
Do you talk to me? Yeah, that's a good point.
You're the first person.
You don't even talk to your wife before you talk to me.
No. She doesn't even know we do it. She doesn't even know I'm here right now.
Begin. Okay, a reminder, check us out on Sundays at 8:30 a.m. on Good Day Charlotte. This weekend, we played a little bit of a hooky. That's the right word, right?
We wanted to show respect to the ACC tournament. They had enough b-ball talk.
Yeah. And we didn't want to jinx the streak, I think. The Hornets took care of that, though.
Yeah.
Good Day Charlotte, Fox 46, if you're local, fox46charlotte.com for a live stream, but we will be on there this
Sunday. Is it our fault?
At 8:30.
Is it our fault?
Well, I guess. We tried not to jinx it, and by not being on there,
I think
we kind of jinxed it.
Our bad.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get shows uploaded to your mobile device of choice. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about the referees in this Dallas game, this loss, the end of the streak. It wasn't the referee's fault by any stretch of the imagination, but there was a couple of shenanigans.
Yeah, we don't like talking about refs. I mean, like you said, you don't want to blame it on them, but sometimes they deserve to be talked about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a second. And then also we're diving deep. Orlando at Charlotte, Charlotte at Miami. The toughest two games I think that the Hornets will face this season are certainly the most important games. Plus, we have an interview with Troy Daniels. It's our Inside the Locker Room segment with Justin Thomas from ESPN. 7:30, much, much more. With that, we say, let's swarm Charlotte. Yeah, we got the Troy Daniels thing coming up, and make sure, get on Twitter right now, at Hive Talk Live, if you're listening live, and we had a poll on the post as well. Do you think Troy Daniels deserves, or would you like to see him stay in the rotation?
It's a hot topic right now.
I think it is. And we'll talk more about it here in a moment.
Okay.
But first, I do want to talk about Kemba Walker, named Eastern Conference Player of the Week. Followed that up. Yeah, well done, sir, Mr. Walker. Followed it up with a good performance against Dallas, a game that, of course, they lost. He struggled in the first quarter, but he wasn't the only one. A lot of guys struggled to shoot the basketball, but he got it going in the fourth a little too late, but ended up with 9 assists. You like to see that from Kemba Walker. He's averaging up above 7 assists.
Yeah, ended up having a good game from a stats standpoint. And that's kind of the next thing you see from a guy who's trying to make the jump. I mean, we already say Kemba's made the leap, the jump this year. But a bad game, still had a good statistical game, and did get the team back into it. I mean, let's not forget, they did come back. They did take a 2-point lead, and then they gave it all away. But you'd like to see that from Kemba, because we've been asking, what's going to happen if he doesn't score 30? He didn't score 30, but how many did he have in the first half? Like 6?
Wasn't many,
and you saw what the result was. So there's a lot on his shoulders. you know, for this team. I mean, that's obvious. But other, you know, there other guys had decent statistical games. There was just a lot more wrong with that particular game than, you know, individual matchups.
It's interesting. I'm seeing sections of these games where he starts to look to distribute. And I don't necessarily think that that was the case earlier this season or really at any point in his career. I mean, he averages career-wise around 5 assists, but mm-hmm. I think those were done in the course of, you know, pick and rolls, kind of. He wasn't looking for assists. The assists were finding him, you know, giving it to Al, things like that.
Right.
But I think he's jumping to a new level with his distribution where he is picking sections of the game where he's going to look to get others involved and step back from scoring.
Well, and he also looked to take it on himself. I mean, that little spurt that he went on and the team went on to get back in. I mean, they were down 19, right, at halftime. So they got it down to, I don't think, when did they take the lead in the fourth quarter, right? Mm-hmm. So it took
a 1-point lead.
Yeah. So that was
for 1 second.
Yeah, that was good to see, though. I mean, there's no quitting this team, but you just can't have the first half like they did.
Well,
against
here's what I'm wondering, David. So they lose this game. So they won 7 in a row. They lose one.
Yep.
But after the game, and then today at practice, I'm listening to these interviews,
they
don't seem very concerned about it. It almost. In a way that bothers me a little bit. Is that okay? Is that okay for me to say? It bothers me a little bit in that I think there are some concerning things in here, and we've seen other performances that I would venture to say were better than these performances, even though they lost those games as well, where there was a lot more concern happening, and they were down, they were on the road, or they were down, you know, injured players. You've got a healthy stack here against a team that wasn't playing well, and certainly the Mavericks needed to win that game, and they mm-hmm. played like it, played very intense defense.
You know, Raymond Felton, you mentioned him this morning. He was sending a message. I mean, looked to me like he wanted to prove something being here,
like a Bobcats
having family in the crowd, Bobcats history. Yeah, I mean, I think so.
He certainly played with much more quickness and energy than I recall him ever having.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, I mean, not ever, but I'm just saying.
Well, since in I'm the saying, NBA, in his.
I'm saying he.
Since
he,
early in his NBA
he
career.
Wanted it. He wanted it.
Real bad.
Real, real bad.
But I just think that there should be a little bit more concern about some issues that are going on.
Okay.
And I think this one, you know, Steve Clifford says, well, it was just turnovers and missed free throws. And. Again, Kemba seems to kind of shake it off, and maybe that's what they need to do. I don't know. Is that what they need to do? Just kind of shake this one off?
Yeah, I was actually on the other spectrum of you from you on this one, because when I heard Kemba after the game, I was a little relieved. I mean, it gave me some comfort, a little Kemba quilt, if you will. And, you know, because they were visibly frustrated in the fourth quarter when they gave the lead back and went down like 13. You could see guys were visibly frustrated, angry, and looking each other in the eyes saying,
but that, to me, that's playoff-level basketball that they saw.
I agree.
You know, you don't expect it from the Dallas Mavericks, but it's coming. Like, that's playoff-level basketball.
That's the concern. Right. That's the concern.
But I'm not hearing any of that.
But you got to – well, we got to see how they – bounce back, because they bounced back well last time. You were really worried about the Atlanta game. I told you why they lost. You poo-pooed it, the early start. That's why they lost. And then, so let's see how they bounce back, because, look, Orlando's coming up, another key game, and then a huge game against Miami. But they can't let this loss beat them twice. You know what I mean? They've got to bounce back and get back to scoring. And so that's what you like about that second half. It was more like they have been playing. You know, so really they bounced back from the first half. It just wasn't enough to overcome what Dallas was doing. So I think that's a silver lining. But look, it was a crappy game. I mean, they played horrible.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's no question about that. And if you want sort of a deeper recap of this game, if that's something you're interested in, if you like Schadenfreude and just really want to bask or wallow, I guess, in the misery of that game, then check out the Hive O'Clock Alarm on iTunes and Stitcher. But I want to move on to one of the reasons that the Hornets got frustrated in this game, the zebras, the referees, the officials. they did not perform well. And the crowd at Time Warner Cable Arena gave them a booing that, I mean, I've never heard such an intense reaction to a group of referees, personally.
Any highlights, anything in particular?
Well, here's the thing. So I was reading, I mean, even, look, when Rick Bunnell from the Charlotte Observer criticizes the referees, then you know that they had a really bad night.
When it's brought up, when anyone does it, but particularly beat writers.
Because beat writers just don't normally go there.
No.
And
we don't either.
To be fair.
Sometimes we do, but.
But normally not, because I think it's such a, I think it's like the last thing you need to be thinking about when in terms of basketball. But Rick actually wrote about it in The Observer, and he argued that the game got out of control because there were some questionable judgment calls not being officiated the same way on both sides, contact not being officiated on both sides. But I think that's the case. I won't disagree with that. There was certainly some of that going on there because the Mavs were playing very physical basketball and the refs were letting it go until the Parsons flagrant on Cody Zeller, which got Cuban upset. But I think everyone agreed in Time Warner Cable Arena, they were a little biased, but most agree that that was a flagrant. But the Mavs were playing physical. The Hornets were not playing as physical, but they were getting a lot of calls on their offensive side of the ball. But I think the crowd got upset because there were some obvious missed travel violations, double dribbles. It took them three times to tip off.
That's not a good sign.
Like, no, and that's tap. Like that's the opening tip. It took them three times. And I think that already got the crowd
a little
frustrated,
yeah,
and questioning, and because I think if you're a player or you're a coach, you're not necessarily concerned with how many fouls are being called on you. And I've heard this from a lot of players and a lot of coaches that they just want it called the consistent. Same way on both ends.
Yeah, you just want it consistent.
Okay, so I think that's what makes them upset. But I think what made the crowd, I don't think the crowd thinks that way. I think the crowd was upset because they're always going to be upset with fouls called on the Hornets.
Sure.
But what took it to that level where they were booing them 1 minute after halftime and booed them as soon as the referees walked onto the court was because, A, they had lost control of the players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had just lost respect for that crew because they were making, again, I watched, and I'm not going to name names, mainly because I don't know them. But one of the referees, I mean, he was right on top of a Deron Williams travel where he took three steps and then moved his pivot foot twice.
Right.
This isn't one of those situations you see on like Shaqton a Fool where he does it like way up at the top of the key and it's sort of in the middle of the court where there's not a referee right on top. This happened on the baseline right in front of the referee and he was looking down and didn't make the call. And when things like that happen, I think that's what sends the crowd into overdrive.
Right. What did you think of the Kemba travel on the inbounds? Because on the quick replay that they showed, I mean, I didn't see a whole lot. I mean, the guy jumped right into the space and I guess made him bobble for a second, but it didn't look like a blatant travel to me. But that was just kind of the same thing. Another instance of... there was a leg kick on one end, and I can't remember the Mavs player who did it. And then Kemba came down and got a foul from...
Yeah.
From... oh, my gosh. Who was it? Help me, Doug.
I don't know what you're talking about. I would love to help you. Farrah Fawcett. Dick Cavett.
All right, I'll think of it in a second. But this is what I was getting at. There were a couple instances where the players were either showing up the refs or screaming right in their face, like for an extended period of time. Another time, Raymond Felton almost followed Frank off the court, pointing at him, and just
because
weird,
Frank
he leveled him,
destroyed him.
He leveled him, but you don't see that. I mean, that's something they tried to cut down on, in the NBA, and no fights broke out or anything. But it was clear that crew lost control of the game. They weren't having a good night either, and that's going to happen. I mean, like I said, we're not blaming that loss on the refs, but it just wasn't ugly. I mean,
listen,
it wasn't
people
pretty.
People love to talk about the referees.
Well,
it is a favorite subject amongst commenting sections everywhere.
It wasn't a good night. It was.
I'll say this again.
Devin Harris. That's what it was.
D. Harris.
He fouled Kemba. He felt Kemba, kicked his leg out, which he actually didn't. But then he freaked out on the ref, but didn't get a technical. So I don't know. I think they lost control earlier, then tried to get it back, and by then it was too late.
And that always riles up. That's why it's funny. It's so important for teams to play well in the first quarter, but it's equally as important for referees to get control early, because once you lose it, it's so tough to get it back. Just like the Hornets, when they lost that first quarter, it made getting back into that game so much tougher for them. And I think the same goes for the referees. You have to establish control of the game immediately, or because precisely what we just said, the players and the coaches, what they respect is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
What they respect is, are you calling this as tightly in the first quarter as you called it in the fourth quarter? Are you calling it as tightly on this end as you are on the other end? And that didn't happen. And on top of that, they were making some Bush League refereeing errors. Anyway, I would not even make a segment of this if it wasn't so egregious.
It wasn't blatant. And I think you're right, because the fans of the Charlotte Hornets in that arena are generally smart and they know basketball, and they've certainly seen their fair share of bad refereeing over the years, especially with the Bobcats coming up, because they didn't get any respect. That's the last thing I'll say.
Oh, it's fire, dude.
No respect.
I'm trying. Daniel saying on Twitter to our question, do you think there were issues with the officiating last night? Daniel agrees with us. Definitely. If Rick Pinnell writes an article about it, that's pretty telling. Because I think Rick goes out of his way not to talk about the officials.
Yeah.
He's almost like a coach in that respect. After the game, Steve protecting that wallet, protecting his check. He knew what the deal was. Like, he talked very strategically about the referees. I take that back. He really didn't talk about it at all. His strategy was not to talk about it at all, because even if you insinuate, even if you have innuendo, they'll
get you.
That's
a no-no. That's a no-no.
They will find you. They will find you, and then they will fine you. That's enough. I'm tired of talking about the Zebras. All right, moving on. Let's get into some of these previews, because, again, I've really harped on this, David. I think that these two games coming up, Orlando visiting Charlotte on Wednesday, and then back-to-back here, Charlotte then travels to Miami. I think these are the two pivotal games. And honestly, losing to Dallas makes that even more the case.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not only going to show me, can they, A, do something that they haven't done all year, which is win divisional games, win important divisional games in the case of the Miami game, but it's also going to show, can they come off a loss and rebound and play better in this new unit? Because we've seen them do it throughout the season. We commented on it a lot, that they didn't go, they had one big losing streak.
Right.
But especially early on in the season when they were healthy, they were able to normally come off a loss with a victory.
Right, which I think that's why you have to hold your horses a little bit on freaking out too much over this one game.
Oh, I'm holding them.
Hold those horses. But you want to see what they do in this one, especially it's at home. It's the last game of this little homestand. And like you said, I mean, well, first of all, they can't afford... They know the situation. They have the playoffs in mind as a goal. They're inching closer and closer. So I think they'll stay locked in. But like you said, they rebounded pretty well previously in the season, minus that one little stretch. So that gives me some hope and why I want to see what they do tomorrow night. And I feel good about them bouncing back because, you know, the veterans on this team, and I think I would lump Kemba into that veteran category now. He's had a little taste of the playoffs, but he's becoming that guy. And like we said, he's certainly the leader of this team. So
he was really rowling up the crowd at Time
Warner. Oh, yeah.
In a way, I've seen it this season, but I don't remember it from past seasons. The way he'll knock down a big layup and then get into the crowd and really just get them going.
It's his time. It's March.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He feels it. He's absorbing it. He's taking it in. And I think, you know, it all goes back to confidence, which is what you need to be a star-level player. The reason this is important, David, the reason I've been harping on this is because not only do they need to beat Miami to get the tiebreaker versus Miami, but they have to essentially, in my mind, they have to run the table on divisional games because the next tiebreaker, so they would tie Miami for the season 2-2 with a victory on Thursday night.
Right.
But then the next tiebreaker goes head-to-head, which they'd be tied 2-2. Then it goes to divisional games. And the Miami Heat are 8-4 in the Southeast Division. The Hornets are 5-7. So that's tough. So a win against Orlando and against Miami would go a long way into rectifying that situation. And with how well the Hornets are playing, I don't think that it is a stretch to say that, and with questions surrounding the health of the Miami Heat, I don't think that, you know, the Hornets and the Heat being tied at the end of the year is a stretch. So they need, I think they need both of these.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Heat are starting to play better, though. I mean, your boy Whiteside coming off the bench.
Oh, we'll get to them. We'll get to them. Let's start with Orlando, though, because this one's coming up tomorrow night. Here's what you need to know about Orlando. They've lost 4 out of their last 5, but take that with a grain of salt because the Dallas Mavericks came into Charlotte having lost 5 of their last 5. Injury issues abound in Orlando. Vucevic, their center, starting center, and Elfrid Payton, who has been inserted into the Orlando starting lineup. Both of those cats out of the game tonight versus Denver, and they'll be on the back end of a back-to-back. So I believe Vucevic has been out for a while. Payton, this would be, I believe, his second game that he would miss. So both of those guys questionable to get back into this thing. And I mentioned they'll be on the back end of a back-to-back for the season. Orlando is 8-6 in the first game of a back-to-back, but just 4-10 in the second game, according to John Denton on NBA.com. They don't shoot the ball well from 36% on the year, 27% in their last 5 games. The Hornets average nearly double the number of three-point shots made on the year. In the last game, the season series stands at 1-1. The Hornets got the better of Orlando in overtime back on January 22nd. The Hornets were without Batum and Zeller. They needed 40 points from Kemba Walker and a 22-3 run near the end of regulation to escape with that road dub. David, what's the stat to watch?
Well, Orlando, like you said, doesn't shoot the ball well, but they do share the ball relatively well. They're 7th in the NBA in assists per game. So I think if the Hornets can keep that number down, limit their ball movement and make it tough, which it might be easier if some of those guys that you mentioned are out. I think that's going to be big for the Hornets to win this game here, Doug.
Yeah, especially Vucevic. Vucevic always gives the Hornets bigs problems just because of his versatility, his ability to move around, to back you down. You don't know whether he's going to back you down or try to work off ball and get a shot. And he's just one of those guys that his biggest attribute is just being available. He's just available all the time. He's that friend you can call up anytime, and he's going to, you know, go to the movies. I don't know. Key matchup.
For me, the Hornets have had trouble recently with guys getting on streaks. Now, some of those guys have been very good to great in your Anthony Davis and your Karl Anthony Towns, and some of them have been former stars in your Deron Williams and your Dirk Nowitzki.
Dirk Nowitzki?
But they've also let some guys who are just streaky guys get going. And I think, to me, Oladipo fits that description more than he does necessarily a straight-up star. But if he gets going and you let him find his groove, he can hurt you. So I think they've got to, you know, keep him under wraps and not let him fire that team up with his athletical dunks.
I like that. I like that matchup.
I like that, too.
I like that. Oh, that's good. All right. Before we get to the Charlotte at Miami preview, that was Orlando. I think Orlando is just kind of a final word on them. They're a dangerous team because, you know, they're still looking for that major star, and they hope that it's Mario Hezonja, who they're bringing off the bench. He's starting to get a little more confident, but with that confidence comes really awful nights. And, you know, you just never know. I mean, Aaron Gordon's playing really well for them right now.
Yeah, are they hoping it's Aaron Gordon?
I think they're hoping it's Mario. I think Aaron provides a lot of great skill sets, but I don't think he's a number one guy.
Did they make that trade because of his dunk contest performance?
Maybe. I mean, there are worse reasons. No, I don't. Listen, don't ask me what Orlando's long term plans are, other than to make Chris at the Hive writer Chris Barnwell rip his hair out.
Oh no.
But yeah, no, I think Orlando's still dangerous because they're a young team. I know it's going to be on the back end of a back to back, and like I said, they don't play well in those situations. But you know, for the Hornets, I just think you have to come prepared. I'll say this: Orlando, the past few games, though they have not played particularly well the entire game, they have gotten off to really good starts in the first quarter. So, you know, if you're the Hornets, I think you have to target coming out in the first quarter and playing well as really a key to winning this matchup. Okay, we're bringing back this Inside the Locker Room segment because we have some great audio here from Justin Thomas at ESPN 730, and all surrounds Troy Daniels, who he is the subject of our Hive Talk Live question of the night. And he is also inserted back into the Hornets rotation, and it has nothing to do with injury. And he essentially took some of Lamb's minutes. Jeremy Lamb got the DNP.
Took them all last night.
Yeah, but he only played 15.
Yeah,
it was very starter heavy. So that's probably had True. Lamb played, he probably would have played 15 as well. But yeah, he took Lamb's place. What do you think about that?
It's something to keep an eye on, I think. Clifford has mentioned that he wants to find Troy Daniels some minutes. So
He
found him, and he gave them to him.
It was in Jeremy Lamb's pockets.
He took them from Jeremy Lamb and gave them to Troy Daniels. Again, I think he's just trying to figure out a little something for the playoffs, it feels like, you know, if he can use him. And you mentioned, too, I mean, Lamb has not been mistake-free. Troy seems to get in there and not have any trouble heating up instantly. And he showed his defensive effort last night as well on that steal. So I think Clifford's been wanting to do it, and the time is running out because you're not going to do it in the playoffs, right? You're not going to insert this guy without seeing a little bit of him before you get to the playoffs.
An audition of sorts.
Yeah, yeah.
Can Troy Daniels get his ticket to Hollywood?
Exactly. So we'll see how much it continues that way. I don't think Jeremy Lamb is not going to play. I mean, that's the guy they've signed to a longer deal and committed some money to, so you would think they're certainly going to be looking his way to give them some playing time as well. What do you think, Doug?
I think I have comments, but I want to save them for after this
gosh.
Audio. I have to save something for after the audio. I can't just have the audio and then we just play the audio and then we move on. I have to say something after the audio.
All right.
Our man Justin Thomas from ESPN 730 caught up with Troy at practice today and discussed what's becoming a brand new role for him on this team. This is a Hive Talk Live exclusive. Mm-hmm. Exclusive.
It seems like whenever you get in, you're always ready to play. Is that something you've always prided yourself on?
Yeah. Coming into the league, my vets were Francisco Garcia, and he used to always just tell me, like, just always be ready. You never know when that time is going to come. You might not get another opportunity. So he used to always tell me, like, always be ready, always be ready. And I tried to pride myself on that throughout my career. So.
And yesterday you got 15 minutes. Did you and Coach talk about it before? Because there are times that people always say, you know, Troy's playing well. Is there ways you can kind of find him spots in last night and find you the minutes? Did you guys talk about that prior?
Prior, he told me shoot around, just be ready to play. You know, he might throw me out there. And, you know, as a young guy, you don't know whenever you're going to play. You just got to be ready. But it was good for him to tell me that, you know, so I can get my mind right and go back and just think about what I need to do for the game. So it helped me out a lot.
I asked Mark, and I would say Friday. I feel like the team seems so excited. Like, if somebody makes a jump shot, you know, the bench is always enthused. And he said this has been, you know, the most close-knit group of guys he's been with off the floor. How much of that would you say has played a role in this team's successes?
It's huge. It's huge. You know, we care about each other on and off the court, and it shows on the court. You know, we like to share the ball with each other. Anybody has a great game, we're all happy for them. You know, it's never, you know, I need to have a good game too. And, you know, just like I got a lot of minutes yesterday and Jeremy Lamb didn't play and he was still cheering me on. You know, it's just that type of team that we have, the type of players and guys that we have, and it's working for us great.
Where would you say, how would you assess your season up to this point?
I think I've been doing everything I was supposed to be doing in the front office and the coaches that wanted me to do, just being ready to play no matter what. So I think it's been going great for me considering the opportunity that I've been getting.
The scream at the end made it.
Who is that? Do we know?
I don't know, but I do have it.
Well,
I'm
going to guess. Hit me one more time.
Just one more time.
That's who it is. I knew I recognized that.
Dylan
scream.
From 90210.
Dang it.
Now, I think it's Frank.
I think it's Frank, too. I was going to say that's so weird.
High five.
Of course, you got to hear that before, which is another reason you held your answer, because you've already heard this. So now, are we done with the clip so you can give your answer, or you still have more?
Oh, yeah!
We know that scream. Okay. First of all, great hat tip to Steve Clifford, who gave Troy Daniels the heads up. Again, you know, I think sometimes we hear about coaching, and it sounds simple. Like, if you're going to play a young guy, you give him the heads up and say, hey, you're going to play tonight, so be ready. But I don't think that's a given. I think communication between coaches and players seems like a very simple thing. But as we've seen in Los Angeles with Byron Scott, I'm never afraid to bring up Byron Scott. I don't think that communication is always a given. So I don't want anyone to take that for granted, because I think we've got to, again, I'm not afraid. I'm not bashful to say we've got a good one in Coach Steve Clifford.
Yeah, I thought you were going to give a hat tip to Justin. He did a great job.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. That goes without saying. But that was awesome. That was an awesome piece of exclusive Hive
Talk
Live.
Exclusive.
That was good.
Also, a hat tip to Jeremy Lamb, who did not. You want to see a guy that you just gave an extension to. You don't want to see him getting sour. I think he's been through this so many. What?
He didn't look thrilled about it to me. Well, but that's kind of his.
Okay, hold on. I love Jeremy Lamb, but I think he has sort of a resting, not thrilled face.
Look, as one relaxed bro to another one, I can recognize that. So
you're saying that it was beyond the resting, relaxed bro.
No. I'm saying that was par for the course. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just saying.
But there's a certain body language. He didn't have his arms folded, did he? He wasn't like this is.
He had his arms and legs crossed.
His eyes were crossed.
For the NBA bench.
This is weird.
He turned his back to the bench. It was awkward.
Now listen, Troy said he was, listen, we have to go with what Troy said. And Troy said that Jeremy Lamb.
That's good to hear.
And we don't know what happened in the locker. I mean,
unless that was Jeremy Lamb that was yelling in the background. No, that's definitely Frank.
Oh, it's so good. I won't play it again.
Somebody must have.
I promise I won't play it again.
Unsweet tea.
I played it again. Okay, here's my thoughts on Troy Daniels. You're right. He is a mistake-free, for the most part, guy. He is going to play mistake-free defense, especially, I think. I mean, he's going to get burnt. Everybody gets burnt, especially guards. But, you know, generally, he's not going to make really boneheaded maneuvers out there, which we've seen with Jeremy Lamb. It's still an issue for him. I don't think anyone would argue that. What I worry about, though, with Troy, and I saw this in his second run in the Dallas game, because I thought he had the great steal and knocked down a couple shots his first time into the game. And then his second time into the game, he had some ball handling issues. He can't really create much of anything off the dribble, because his handle really isn't there. And, you know, that's what will keep him, I think, from being an explosive impact player in the lineup, as opposed to Jeremy Lamb is ready, set, go, can handle the ball, can get to the rim on his own. And if his shot's not there, he can still manage to. If his shot's not there and he's making good decisions with the ball, which are not givens for Lamb, but if he's doing those things, he has a much better chance of becoming an impact player on a certain night, whereas Troy is going to be fully dependent on the looks that other guys can get him. And when you're talking about a guy who's not used to playing with Kemba, who's not used to playing with some of these other guys, the other distributors, Lynn, Batum, you know, that's going to be an issue. So we'll see. Maybe that develops, though. I mean, you got to give a guy time. You got to give a guy game experience for that kind of thing to develop. But that's my concern moving forward.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just something we're going to keep an eye on. I think they're both going to play a part at some point, you know, even in the playoffs, I think. But you got to remember, you know, Jeremy Lamb sat on the bench for a long time in Oklahoma City. And even though Troy Daniels has kind of been up and down, like we said, he's got that playoff experience. So he is maybe a little bit more comfortable. But, like, I think that's the thing, though. Well, I think Clifford is trying to get him minutes, see what that's like. But he also obviously is going to lean on guys that he can trust, which has been his MO time and time again. So I don't think it's a permanent thing as of right now, but we'll monitor it, keep our eye on it.
As we always do. Let's go on to this. I mean, this is going to be a great game. I hope it's a competitive game.
I'm nervous about that game, Doug.
The first road game in several weeks. Charlotte traveling to Miami on Thursday night. And again, the back end of a back-to-back for Charlotte. Here's what you need to know about Miami, though. They hold the keys right now to the fourth seed and home court in the first round. They're a game and a half ahead of Charlotte. The Hornets, again, as I mentioned before, need a win plus some victories in nearly all of their remaining divisional games, plus a smidgen of help from Miami in order to hold that tiebreaker. Dwayne Wade is not rushing back from a thigh bruise. Oh, my God. You ever had a thigh bruise, David? That sounds awful.
I'm sure I have.
There's only a couple of places I would not want to have a bruise less or more than the thigh. That sounds awful. Anyway, it kept him out of Monday's contest against Denver. The Heat are also without Chris Bosh, who did rejoin the bench, but I think Miami wants to be 100% before they bring Christopher Bosh back into the lineup.
Oh, yeah.
From those blood clot situation that he has. So they're certainly not rushing him back. I don't expect him to play Thursday.
No.
But, you know.
You never know. But it seems pretty early.
Yeah. Last game, the Heat beat the Hornets in Charlotte 98-95. Look, the Heat and the Hornets, other than the game that the Hornets blew the Heat out in Charlotte, the Hornets and the Heat have had two really close games. 98-95, the final score in that last game. Hassan Whiteside had a 10-10-10 triple-double, 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 blocks. Bosh and Wade dropped 20 apiece in that game. So, you know, the Heat could be without Wade, could be without Bosh.
That's going to help.
That could help. David, what's your stat to watch?
My stat for this one, Doug, you know, neither one of these teams fouls a lot per game, but the Hornets shoot much better from the three-throw line. If you forget about last night, which they struggled, and Coach Clifford brought that up. So I think if the Hornets can get back to the line, make some money there, it's going to help them in trying to beat this Heat team. And, you know, that's something they have been counting on. So if they can add that back in, it, you know, it would be a good sign moving forward as well.
Yeah, the Heat define themselves as a defensive team. So they're going to make it difficult for you to make shots. And, you know, they still – I'm being told it's Justice
it's
now.
It's Justice.
I may still keep saying Justice, but
who told you?
I don't know. Justice Winslow. Okay, fine. Justice Winslow. He's still playing well defensively and still trying to find his shot, but still playing well defensively. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the threats on every shot attempt are going to be there when you play the Miami Heat. They're also maturing offensively, even without Wade and even without Bosh. Different guys are stepping up for this team, Amari Stoudemire, and one name we haven't mentioned yet, newly acquired guard Joe Johnson, who can I read these stats to you? Because I'm in love with StatMuse.com right now,
mm-hmm.
and you can type questions into StatMuse, and it will pull statistic results for you very instantly. Very instantly. So the question that I typed in, Joe Johnson last five games averages... Here we go. 17.2 points per game. Wowza. 33 minutes per game. He played 39 or 40 minutes in the last game. I mean, they're tacking the minutes on to old trusty Joe. Old Joe. I don't know. You're not going to help me out at all. All right, David. three rebounds, three assists, one steal a game. So, I mean, he is active in every sense of the word. 58% from beyond the arc, 53% overall, shooting free throws. I mean, he is two free throws, so he's getting to the line a little bit. I mean,
a little resurgence there.
Yeah, I think playing on a team that is a legitimate, not even a legitimate playoff contender, but just a legitimate basketball team can go a long way in helping a man's confidence.
That helps.
So, yeah, you can't forget about Joe Johnson, and you can't lean back on sort of the old story on Joe Johnson, which was he was in decline. I think he's, at least for the time being, he's playing like a man possessed. What's your key matchup?
My key matchup is your boy,
Pride of Gastonia,
Hassan Whiteside. He just finds a way to brutalize the Hornets, it seems, whenever they play. You mentioned that triple-double
last game.
Yeah.
They went right at him.
Yeah, that would be my key, actually. Don't keep shooting the ball right at Hassan Whiteside, if you can help it.
No, you've got it. You have to drive and
you got to get him on the move, right?
They forgot the kick part.
Yeah. Kick it, dudes.
You got to get him on the move. You either have to try to pull him out, and that's going to require, and he's coming off the bench now, but he's getting a double-double off the bench. He is.
I know.
It's going to be interesting because he's going to find time to play against Al Jefferson and to play against Cody Zeller, I think.
Man, that's such a weapon coming off the bench, and who would have thought he would respond that well coming off the bench, too?
I certainly wouldn't because he's had maturity issues. And I think it gives you hope for a guy like Jeremy Lamb that if you're in a good system, I think Miami has a good, Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra.
Why would anyone ever want to leave?
Because
you have to ask yourself.
Listen, you can't go home again unless you're the best player in the NBA.
Yeah, if you're going back to the land.
God.
Hashtag the land.
Why did you have to... what was I going to say? Oh, you know what's interesting about this game to me, if Wade is unable to play and if Bosch is most likely unavailable to play. In the last game, I felt like Miami was able to, and Spoelstra, they were able to out-coach the Hornets. They were strategically able to get guys in and out, Hassan Whiteside being one of them, in opportune moments, but they were able to do that because they were generally healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have, I think, that flexibility to be able to either hide or take advantage of Hassan Whiteside like they can or like they could in that last game. And I think the Hornets are much healthier. Although, here's another name. Can I pop another name out at you? Josh Richardson, the other rookie for Miami, second rounder. He's scoring 15 now. And because in the last five games, this Miami team, a team known for defensive stalwarts,
mm-hmm.
and not really being concerned about the number of points they put up every night, they're scoring 111 per game over the last five.
I know. It's crazy. They're playing well.
And a lot of that has to do with getting those 10 points off the bench from every night from
Hassan Whiteside, yeah.
And then getting contributions from guys that were supposed to be done. Joe Johnson, Amari Stoudemire, and then guys you would not expect at all, like Josh Richardson, who, I think there are certain guys, David, that just look like they're supposed to be good at basketball. They just have the long arm. It's sort of a Kevin Durant-ish look to me. Like, they just look like a spider.
Right. They just have the length.
And Josh Richardson, he looks like a little mini Durant. And he's playing like it right now. He's been knocking down threes and getting by guys with not only quickness, but in that Batum-like way of, if I get half a step on you, my arm's going by you and I'm going to lay it up.
Man, they have
the concentration, the focus.
Three Duke guys on that roster.
My God. Oh, you know what's interesting? So Carolina is in the same bracket as Kentucky.
Right.
A lot of Carolina guys on the Hornets. A lot of Kentucky guys on the Hornets.
That's true.
Or just wait.
That's true.
How many?
MKG. Aaron Harrison from time to time. And so you got Hansbro, you got Marvin, and you don't have PJ anymore.
No.
So you just have two, right?
Two versus two. I think Indiana. Isn't Indiana in the same bracket.
Indiana and Kentucky could face off in the second round.
So there's Cody. You bring Cody into it.
So now Cody's into this conversation. It's crazy. It's going to be a wild time.
Wait, you know the story. They always write the stories about like, oh, we're really rooting for our team and we hope that the other guy's team loses.
It's a classic.
Can you tell I have a little disdain for college basketball stories leaking into my NBA?
We just broke it down for you.
I swear to God, I used to love college basketball.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of people did.
What happened?
It got horrible.
I don't even think... I think it did... It did get horrible, and then they tried to fix it, and that they knew it was going to make it more horrible in the short term, and it certainly did.
I don't want my halves to have 25 points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a problem. I want to see guys make shots every now and again.
Do you think that part of the problem is just oversaturation? That the March Madness, the brackets... That at a certain point, obviously, like a ton of people still are going to lose their minds over.
Right. I think for me, the switch came when if you watch a lot of NBA basketball, it's very hard to go back and watch college on a regular basis. To me, at least. To me, it was.
And you have to take into account, I think, that the rise in mass popularity of filling out brackets, bracket challenges, mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff. Happened at a time when the NBA was struggling.
Yeah, that's always like going to be fun, though. I mean, people are always going to do it in their office and gamble and do the pool.
I understand that. But I'm saying that, like, during the rise of the internet, which made a lot of this stuff a lot easier.
Accessible, right?
Was during the same time that the NBA, you know, the 2003 draft NBA, pre-LeBron Wade,
right.
Carmelo. That was a time where the NBA was really struggling to present a reason for people to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Come watch Kenyon Martin and Jason Kidd.
And Kerry Kittles.
And Kerry Kittles. Face off.
There may be something to
NBA
that.
Showtime.
I don't know. It's just you watch it now. I mean, it's pretty brutal. It can be really bad.
And that, and you know what's... I just thought of this. Bing! The big story this year. What's the big story this
Seniors.
Year?
Seniors.
There's not a lot of star talent in the NCAA in the tournament.
Well, no, because it's typically all freshmen. I mean, that's what we've seen for the last couple of years. This year, the senior-laden teams are the ones that are grabbing the headlines. I mean, Ben Simmons, hello, not even in the tournament. Not even in the NIT tournament, by the way.
And some would say his team is not in the NIT tournament because Ben Simmons... How do you feel about that?
Ooh.
I'm talking a lot of just...
Is that a conspiracy? Is that out there? I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's out there for sure.
Well, whatever. I mean, I think there's enough tape on him. Do you really think, and we can break this down right now, the draft, Ingram v. Simmons, who are you taking?
I've just basically showed my cards. Hold on. Let me channel my Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley analysis of these two gentlemen. You know, listen, Ben Simmons, really likes to distribute the ball. He's a challenging player to deal with on the defensive end. I don't know how he's going to do without a shot, but, you know, he looks like a competitor, like a really solid competitor. And then Brandon Ingram, length for days, and, you know, he's also someone that needs to develop an outside shot, but I don't know. That's all I got. Like, that's my general, like, I'm not going to give you one statistic because I can't.
You were very hard on the whole crew. They are there for one reason, for good TV.
Okay. It wasn't good TV, though.
No, but that wasn't their fault. CBS's fault for blowing it out for 2 hours.
I'm not asking, you're pretending, David, that I'm asking for a lot. I'm asking for one statistic. A simple one. Give me minutes played.
You're just a stats nerd, Doug.
I don't want a souffle. I do not want filet mignon. I want a McPick 2. Well, that's a stat. Give me a McPick 2.
You were tuned into the wrong show, clearly. It was a 2-hour long show that could take 30 minutes at the most, and therefore, they're not going to pack it with stats. That part was fun to watch, though. At least that part was entertaining.
I'm going to, but you bet. Tune in Thursday, because I'm going to ask Justin Thomas, who is on record as saying, I'm not a numbers guy. Anyone's going to defend that CBS show, it will be Justin Thomas.
He won't defend it, though. And not maybe on that front, but I mean, no one's going to defend that show. It's horrible. It's predictably horrible.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Let's talk about what's going on in the NBA. Usually this segment includes Nick Denning. Nick could not be here, but it's a segment we like to call What's Happening Around the NBA. Here's my big. This is the biggest story in the NBA, David. Are you ready for this?
Mm.
It's not the Cavs continuing to embarrass themselves and LeBron walking off the court in the middle of a game that he wasn't playing in, to be fair.
Are you really worried about the Cavs, though, honestly? I mean, I know you aren't, but I'm saying, like, for me, it's like, look.
They're going to lose anyway.
What do you mean?
They're going to lose the championship anyway.
Oh. Maybe.
Like, if you're going to fall off a cliff, I don't think, you know, how stylistically you fall off that cliff is really going to make a difference.
Yeah, but I'm not concerned with them making, like, I wouldn't be too overly concerned with them not making the finals at this point. Like, I don't really care what happens. The same thing happened last year. Everybody's all up in arms. Anyway.
That's not even the biggest story in the NBA. It's the biggest story in the NBA involves Drake. Man, what a time to be alive. That was Future, but Drake was on the sideline for Bulls Raptors and decided to become part of the game, David, taunting Bulls inbounder Justin Holiday so viciously from the sideline. You'll never hear, I don't think you'll hear vicious and Drake in the same sentence very often, that the Bulls picked up a 5-second violation because Drake was taunting the inbounder. First off, I would like to know what you think he said. I'm no lip reader.
I must admit, I've only seen a still shot of this, so I can only imagine he said something to the effect of, miss it?
Here's the second question. I think you'll enjoy this
okay.
one. If there was one celebrity that would cause you to get a 5-second call like that, who would it be?
Oh, man. One celebrity.
One celeb really trying to get in your crawl.
So they would be heckling me.
Yes. No, like, wiles or anything. They're really just trying to get in your head. Like, hey, buddy.
I mean, Kevin Hart seems like the obvious answer, but he's the first one that popped in my head.
Kevin Hart. You know what mine would be?
Hmm.
Kenny and Charles talking about college basketball.
Well, sometimes they do sit courtside.
If you listen to the show a lot, you know my hardline stance on hecklers at basketball games.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, this is no different than any other heckler, except, you know.
This is going to surprise you.
Hit me.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I'm normally not. I'm normally very, like, I don't like anyone heckling a basketball player in the way that Drake did it.
Okay.
But why I'm okay with Drake doing it is because they're on the same celebrity level. Well, actually, Drake probably outweighs.
No, they're not.
Drake outweighs Justin Holiday. But I'm saying in terms of being in the spotlight, the reason that I think, you know, that I think.
He's a professional basketball player.
Fans pay money to go there to watch, and all the fans, not just the heckler, but all the fans go there to pay and watch basketball happen. But I just think.
In that setting, the guy on the floor has as much cachet as perhaps Drake.
I think it makes it different. Okay. Yeah, because they're on the same. They're both in the spotlight. They're on the same. That's probably.
What did he say? What do you think he said?
I don't. Maybe he offered to.
Miss it?
Maybe he offered to, like, let him listen to his latest album. What's it called? There's, like, a new Drake album coming out. Views or something? Something?
Views from the Six?
Yeah. That's what he said.
Maybe.
Drake, sixth man.
He just dropped the ball and was like, let's do it.
Drake was the Raptors sixth man, sixth god, even.
So that's the biggest story.
I just tapped out all of my Drake references
right
there.
That's the biggest story in the NBA right now.
Zero Drake reference.
That's the biggest story.
Well, Phil Jackson could coach home games next season for the New York Knicks. And the Lakers could keep Byron Scott to wait on Phil to opt out and pick a new coach.
Both
of these rumors coming to you from the good folks at CBS Sports. Yeah, Phil Jackson. There's now talk of Phil Jackson coaching Knicks home games.
That should go well.
Because they could keep Rambit. It's sort of like dual quarterback situation in college.
I don't see any problem with that.
There's no way that could go wrong.
Hey, you know what else today is? It's Steph Curry's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yesterday? Was that yesterday?
What'd you get him?
How old do you think he is?
Well, he played all 4 years at Davidson.
Don't think it. Don't ever think it or talk it out. Just how old do you think he is?
I'm terrible at guessing things. 72, 47, a billion.
How old is he? There's only 9 choices.
20. I don't know. I told you I'm not good at guessing things.
Steph Curry just turned 28.
That's old. That's older than me.
Than I thought he was.
Wait, no. He's just as old as me now. I'm 28.
That's older than I thought he was, Doug. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying?
I'm just saying. LeBron just turned 30. Big Al's 30.
No.
I mean, I think Steph's got plenty
of
miles.
Big Al's not 30.
How old is Big Al?
I don't know. Is he 30?
Exactly.
Don't make me guess things.
I'm blowing your mind with this.
I'm good at guessing.
New segment, how old is this guy?
How many minutes do we have left? Only a few. Okay, time for one last thing. And it's growing into one of my absolute favorite segments. I have to give this paper to you, David, because this is called Frank Kaminsky Asking Questions on Twitter. It's something that Frank is known to do on Twitter. If you follow Frank Kaminsky on Twitter, he asks a lot of extremely important questions on topics that really hit at the heart of who we are as human beings. So it's time for Frank Kaminsky Asks Questions on Twitter. Read us the first question.
Are these all three actual tweets?
Yes. That's right. This is the first time you're doing this segment. Yes, these are actual tweets. I should make that note.
This first one is an actual tweet?
That is an actual tweet from Frank Kaminsky. Here we go. Frank Kaminsky Asking Questions on Twitter.
Wait, whose tits am I calling?
Questions. I really have no comment on that one. I have a comment on a couple of these, but
in response to Jeff Goodman of ESPN saying neither Frank nor Sam
Decker, that part I put in there,
could dance. This is what Frank said.
Yeah.
What do you bring to the table, Mr. Goodman?
Questions. Calling him out. What do you bring to the table? Jeff, can you dance?
Jeff?
Have you danced in China? Jeff? Have you danced in any international country? Jeff? Questions.
Oh my gosh. How do you pronounce this? Dobby? Dobby?
I don't read Harry Potter.
Oh man.
Dobby. We'll go with Dobby.
Is there a harder fictional death to swallow than Dobby dying in Deathly Hallows Part 1? I'm still not over it.
Questions. That's Frank Kaminsky Asking Questions on Twitter.
Neither of us have read Harry Potter, I guess.
Neither of us have read Harry Potter. I did not get into it as a child.
Big Al's 31.
Good. Harder fictional death. Do you have a fictional death that comes to mind?
I think I do, and I think you know what it is. That's right.
It was fictional in two senses, if we have any dedicated 90210 watchers out there. It was fictional in the sense that it actually, spoiler alert, didn't happen, and fictional in the sense that he's a fictional character. Hey, shout out to @HornetsGifts. Go follow them on Twitter right now. Great Hornets Gifts. Shout out to them for, one, providing delicious Hornets gifts, but for also making us a super cool sign, which you can see if you go to our Twitter, @HiveTalkLive.
Now, it was not Hornets Gifts.
Oh, don't. We don't have time for that conversation. We do not have time. I'm rolling the outro.
Wow, we've been on track the whole time today.
It's gone completely off the rails.
Completely is playing.
Just like that Dallas game. That'll do it for us, Hornets fans. Thanks to our we didn't have a guest, so I forgot to delete that from the rundown. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Hive Talk Live for live game updates and more. Go to atthehive.com for all the latest news and analysis. For David and producer Katie, I'm Doug saying stay bought in, stay believing. All hail the teal and purple.